Hello, everybody, and welcome back after our summer break to this new season of Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. We are excited, happy, and just really honored that you've decided to spend this time with us. Today, we're going to talk about one of my personal favorite things in the world, and that is sleep. We hope you don't fall asleep while we're talking, but if you need to, press pause and have a little kip.
But we won't be napping on the job. We will be sharing some insights and some thoughts about why it's really important to invest in our sleep. Make it a priority, not a nice to have. So many people I meet tell me that they're chronically tired and they don't sleep well. Is that the same story that you've been hearing, Sarah?
Absolutely. I think lots of people are tired all the time. I think lots of people also, interestingly, so my husband, he had long COVID, any of our long-term listeners will know, and he has days where he's really tired and really awake. So one of the things he's done is got himself a watch, which monitors his sleep. And here's the thing, Jenny, we can't figure out why it's a good day, why it's a bad day for sleep. It can be, we're trying to figure it out. What is it? Is it noise? Is it light? Is it time? Is it heat? Is it cold? Is it sugar? Is it alcohol? Is it food? Is it what you've done in the day? I think this is one of the challenges that maybe many of us have, but we're not wearing a watch and we don't like to track it in the way that happens. But what do people need to do to have a good sleep?
That's the million-dollar question, really, isn't it? Because there are so many people out there who would give anything to have a good night's sleep. You know that there's a growing number of people who would call themselves an insomniac. My brother is an insomniac. My husband is an insomniac. They like sleep, but they never feel that they get enough of the sleep time. They can go to sleep. My husband can go to sleep really easily. He falls asleep just like because he's sleep deprived as well. And then the middle of the night, he wakes up, ba-doing, and he can't get back to sleep. And so he gets up, he puddles around the house, he makes himself a milky drink, puddle. And if he's really naughty, he goes on his iPad and starts fiddling around with that. And he gets into big trouble if I hear he's done that during the night, because that's definitely going to stop him from going back to sleep. But that's his story. My brother is a bit different in that he just can't stay asleep, and he's also a bit of a night owl. So he doesn't want to go to bed when everybody else does. So he, when everybody else has disappeared off to bed, he stays up and he gets the video games out. And then he plays video games for a couple of hours, well into the wee hours of the morning, until he feels, I suppose, I ought to go to bed now. And of course, he's all hyped up because he's been pressing buttons and watching the screen all that time.
Being busy and getting dopamine hits all the time.
And then has to have half a gallon of coffee in the morning to get himself out of bed to go to work. And then he repeats that every night after night. So I think sometimes we create our own sleep nightmares through the choices we make during the day. And sometimes during the night as well, that set us up for a poor sleep pattern. So I think first thing to recognize is, do I have a problem with my sleep? And if the answer is yes, then to have a little bit of self-reflection. What is contributing to my poor sleep? What is going on? Am I worried about something? Because that's a big one. Am I working too hard and I can't switch off? Am I taking medication? Do I have long COVID? Because that is well known. Because unless we can actually start to go through with a fine tooth comb to look at what do I know works to help me get a better night's sleep versus what am I currently doing that could be making it harder? And then you start to say, okay, what do I need to do from here? But I think the main message is not to put up with it, because when it becomes your usual way of living with terrible sleep, you're doing yourself a huge disservice. And you're actually setting yourself up for poor health and perhaps poor mental health, which is not good either.
There's so many things that sleep impacts, right? not to mention just things like you don't feel so good in the morning or you need lots of coffee. But I think I found this. So it affects almost every type of tissue. Is this right, Jenny? We've got brain, heart, lungs, metabolism, immune function, mood, disease resistance. So all sorts of things like high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, depression, and obesity. So like, I don't know, the top five things that kill people, yeah. I think. Pretty
yeah.
close.
Yeah.
Which I think is crazy. I find it really interesting because two reasons. One, oh, I love sleep. Well, apparently, when my parents brought me home from the hospital when I was born, my mom phoned up and said, my baby's sleeping through the night. And they laughed at my mother and told her to go to bed. So I have always apparently loved sleep.
Hey.
The two times when I've had insomnia, bouts of what I would call insomnia, get to sleep and then get woken up somewhere in the 2-3 o'clock region, have been one time I was really stressed at work and the thoughts would wake me up and then I'd feel stressed in the night. And the other was I was having a great time at work and I was excited and energized. And so again, we get to this place where being highly engaged can have some of the same negative impacts as being stressed, right? Which I find really interesting because this shows up in multiple different places. And I don't know why or how I would stop that from happening. Do you have any tips? What do you recommend? What have you recommended?
Okay, so I think first question, is it something that's impairing your ability to function normally the following day? Because
that's a great question.
If it is, you need to be doing something about it now. You're surviving and it doesn't really seem to be bothering you too much. Your sleep could be better. Then it's less of an urgent issue, but I still think it's something that needs to be addressed at some point.
Yeah.
I think it's important to differentiate between sleep deprivation and insomnia because the two things are different.
Okay.
So
okay.
If I had a hand of sleep deprivation and a hand of insomnia, how would you tell the difference?
The way I feel about it is sleep deprivation feels like more of an emergency kind of thing. So it's more acute, as in I probably can't function at all, would be how that's how I would react or and have reacted to sleep deprivation. So I've been up for a number of days, but perhaps I'm wrong. Am I getting that right? And then insomnia is a bit more something that happens over and over a long period of time?
Insomnia does often occur over a more extended period of time. But the main difference is opportunity. With people who are sleep deprived, they actually have the opportunity to go to bed and go to sleep. But they choose not to.
Oh, choose
to defer going to bed.
So
they stay up late for whatever reason.
Yes.
Or they get up super, super early for whatever reason.
So yes.
They're restricted.
I have read this. A lot of mothers do this, I have heard.
Yes. Yes.
To give themselves some time outside of the...
If it's the only time when it's quiet in the house and you've just got to yourself before all hell breaks loose, why you would get up a little bit early, whip around just to enjoy that peace and quiet or do something on your own when everybody else has gone to bed. I can understand that. But the trouble is, if it means that you're not getting the amount of sleep you actually need, then you're doing yourself a disservice because you can't catch up on lost sleep. So many people say, oh, during the week, it's all busy. And if I get 6 hours, I'm doing really well. So I just have a lie-in on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You heard that too?
I have heard that. And my understanding is that doesn't do anything.
It doesn't. It makes things worse, actually. Because you think that, oh, I've had a lie-in, therefore I've paid back some of my sleep debt and it's all going to be okay. No, because the thing about sleep is it requires us to be consistent in our habits of going to bed and getting up at the same time. So if we're doing something for 5 nights and then 2 nights we do it differently, we stuff up our circadian rhythm. It doesn't know if it's Arthur or Martha and we're actually compounding.
I really like that description. That makes so much sense to me. This, of all of the self-care things that one can do, this is the one where I'm like, I've got this. If anything, I'm on the, I sleep a little bit too much at night. But I can really understand, I think, again, a lot of women I know and have read and observed do this. And so it's an interesting trade-off, because the not having any me time or any space for oneself can impact mental health.
Yeah.
But by staying up late, we're also putting ourselves at a higher risk of depression, right?
So definitely. Yeah.
I'm not sure that's the trade-off it sounds like. Is that it? Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. I do agree. It's very interesting that psychologists and psychiatrists are now very much more aware of the interaction between poor sleep and mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. They reckon that 90% of people who might be dealing with anxiety or depression or panic disorder or whatever, 90% of those people are likely to be experiencing some form of sleep difficulty. But unless you ask, they're not always going to tell you. So they are now trying to make sure that if somebody presents with symptoms of anxiety or symptoms of depression, that they ask about how well are you sleeping at night to try and get an idea.
Wow.
Because sometimes if you can sort out what's going on with the sleep challenge, that automatically improves their mental health.
Yep.
And if you deal with somebody's mental health, you're going to end up improving their sleep pattern. So it works both directions. So what matters is
that makes so
ask
much
about
sense.
Your sleep, and then make sure that's addressed simultaneously or roughly at the same time.
Everyone is different.
Yes.
Just like babies are different, right?
Yes.
Obviously, you get me as a baby. I sleep all night, so all good. You get some other babies that I know of.
Never sleep.
Less. Never sleep, right? And I think even from birth, we have this like obsession with sleeping, sleep like a baby, all the rest of it. But people are different. Yes, some people need a lot of sleep over here. Some people need less sleep. One, how do you know? And two, is there a perfect amount of sleep?
The perfect amount of sleep is what's perfect for you. And you're absolutely spot on. It's an individual requirement that only you know. I was curious when you said, I think I sleep too much. How much do you sleep? How many hours do you feel replenished by?
I'm like in probably between 8 and 9 hours.
Okay.
And occasionally 10. The interesting thing, though, is that in 2012, my poor husband, he always gets such a showcase on this show. He broke his leg and he was always up earlier than me at that time. And so we stopped using an alarm and we've never gone back to it, other than if I have an airplane or an appointment that's quite early that I could risk missing. I never wake up with an alarm. So I go to bed somewhere between, I would say 9 and 10 is pretty average. And I wake up somewhere between 5:30 and 7, depending on the day and the time and how I feel and all the rest of it. And I wake up naturally.
Wonderful.
And I love it, but I love sleep. I'm one of those people where I'm like, I really want time by myself, and sleep wins every time.
Okay.
I'll just go to bed with my children. I've done this for years. It's not a big deal for me, but I do worry because some people are like, oh, like they need 6 hours or 7 hours. And I know because I can do stuff on that. But if I have 2 days where I've had maybe 6 hours, I'm gone. I'm a goner. I might as well be drunk all day. That's how I come across, is I feel drunk. I can't think. I can't concentrate. I get a migraine. So if I have a really short, if I don't sleep, I get a migraine and then I'm useless for the rest of the day. So whatever is going on in my body, it just says sleep is my priority. But I know people who don't, and they, to all intents and purposes and to all appearances, they do not need that level of sleep at all. And they're doing amazing things. And they, again, appear to be thriving. I'm assuming they're not lying about it, that they just don't need it.
It's funny, isn't it? We always compare ourselves to other people, even though we can recognize that, you know, I've worked out what is ideal for my system, 8 to 9 hours sleep. And I feel really great on that. And then somebody else comes along and says 6.5 hours, sometimes 6.75. And you feel, are they better than me because they need that lesser amount?
They have more time or whatever.
My husband doesn't need as much sleep as I do.
I love the fact that you no longer use an alarm clock, because it means that your body is aligned to when it needs to wake up. So you don't need the alarm. Your internal alarm wakes you up.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
So my internal alarm goes off and wakes me up when I need to wake up. And invariably, I find I'm the only person in bed, because my husband is usually up a good hour before me, because he doesn't need as much sleep as I do.
Need the sleep. So,
I think this idea of we have to go to bed together at the same time is really a bit outmoded, because it's working like that. And if you've got somebody who needs a bit more and forcing yourself to get up, you're just actually getting a bit sleep deprived as a result. The 7 to 9 hours is a guide. And the rule of thumb is, because we have what's called a sleep drive, the longer you stay awake, the stronger that drive becomes. So by the time you've been awake for 18 hours, most of us will be sitting there wanting the matchsticks to hold the eyes open, thinking, I really need to go to bed. It's that horrible time when you're sitting here having your friends with dinner party or something, and you're tired, you've had a glass of wine, and you can feel yourself fighting. You're trying desperately not to fall asleep, but your eyelids keep closing. But why? You can't resist it. It's making you work. Fundamentally, for every 2 hours that you are awake, you need 1 hour of sleep. That's a rule of thumb, but it's
nice.
A rough guide. Okay. So if you are awake for 18 hours, you're going to need roughly 9 hours. And I think it's important not to get too hung up about how much time we sleep. If you are waking up naturally, especially, and you're feeling bright, alert, rested, you've probably had sufficient sleep, and it's been good quality sleep where it's not fragmented. You're not waking up many times during the night. The worst things for fragmenting sleep are alcohol and smoking and caffeine.
Most
people know about caffeine.
Interesting.
But smoking, which is a bit of a no anyway, is terrible for fragmenting sleep. And alcohol knocks
us out. I didn't realize that.
Because we go to sleep easily when we've had a glass of something. I've gone to sleep. But we've actually just been rendered unconscious. It's not a proper sleep. And then during the night, you're much more likely to toss and turn a bit and not sleep as well. So we just need to be mindful about what
and
we do.
And is it the sugar as well in alcohol?
No, not really. It's the alcohol.
Oh, no. It's just the alcohol. Okay, fine. I was intrigued about the sugar. There's so much on this, and I think it's so interesting that you were telling me before that the World Health Organization is talking about like sleep being this huge pinpoint at things about weight, about depriving people of sleep. In testing, there was a study that you told me about. I think you should share it because it makes so much sense, but also it's just like shocking.
So when we started this conversation, you mentioned that you are under the impression that sleep impacts us, every organ, every system. And that's true. Down to the cellular level, you can basically assume that to function optimally, every cell in your body requires you to get enough good quality uninterrupted sleep. If we don't, we pay a price. And one of the big prices, I think, and this is a question that only I think society and businesses can answer, is to basically try to get rid of night shifts, because they are so bad. They end up disturbing everything in our systems, and they have quite an impact on genetic makeup as well, putting us at much higher risk of premature death. And the World Health Organization now deems that night shift should be deemed a class one carcinogen. Creates cancer. Which is really scary.
And that's sad, scary, worrisome. Yeah.
So,
because also people do need doctors, nurses, healthcare professionals, probably need to be working at night, first line responders across the board. Yeah. So, how can you support them? Or is that just it just is. And just so is. They need to be extra careful in other areas? Wow. There's nothing you can do to
scare Jenny. So, we just need to be more aware of that.
I find that scary. My mom worked as a night shift person for years and years.
You have to take it with a grain of salt, because just because you work night shift doesn't mean that you're going to die of cancer immediately or anything like that. But it's just being aware that
changing our sleep pattern away from the normal can have a significant impact on our future health.
Yeah.
The big thing I think that our sleep-deprived society needs to be aware of is the contribution it plays in making us fat and the contribution it makes to making us at high risk of heart disease and type 2 diabetes. And the study I shared with you earlier was this delightful study where they took 5 or 6 university students, all men, so 18, 19, fit, healthy university students, and they deprived them of sleep. They were only allowed to get, I think it was 4.3 hours a night for 5 nights. And then they measured various parameters to see what effect it had on their system. And the biggest or the most significant impact was that it really affected their metabolism and in regards to their sugar regulation. They became insulin resistant to the level that they were now in a pre-diabetic state. Just 5 nights of sleep deprivation put these healthy young men into a pre-diabetic state, which fortunately was quickly reversed when they went back to normal sleep. But it just goes to show that we mustn't take poor sleep for granted. We must work hard to try and get better sleep more often. Yeah. And I know for some people listening to this, they'll be saying, Jenny, I hear what you're saying, but I can't sleep. My response to that is, please, if sleep is a major issue, talk to somebody about it. Because the gold standard treatment is something called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, which is run by psychologists and psychiatrists. Mm-hmm. And it's got a very good track record of helping people. We often talk about sleep hygiene. You've probably heard of that, and cool, dark, and whatever. And they're important too. But if you've tried everything, nothing's working, then there are sleep specialists out there. There are people who do sleep studies on people. I've had a sleep study. Have you had a sleep study? Ever?
No, I haven't. I'm intrigued by this. What did yours show?
You put electrodes all over your head, and then you go to sleep wired up like a Christmas tree, and they record how well you're sleeping. It's really interesting to have it done and also to find out what the results are. But it's a test that's often done if people are suspected of having sleep apnea, which is where people stop breathing during the night.
Yep.
And they're typically people who snore very heavily. So if you have a partner who snores like a wild wildebeest, they probably need to go and see somebody about it.
Yeah, because my understanding is that's quite, it's on the up, sleep apnea, isn't it?
It is.
Something that they're diagnosing a lot more. Yeah.
And again, it's something that can be managed and can be treated. And if it's associated with weight gain, sometimes simply losing the weight helps to reduce the amount of sleep apnea that somebody does. We have to just be mindful, how is our body overall? What are we doing in our lifestyle choices that are maybe contributing to poorer sleep or better sleep? So we have things we can do.
A little question is, when I spend more time outside, even though I love sleep and I'm good at sleep, when I am outside, the natural going to sleep, waking up, being tired instead of exhausted tired changes drastically for me. When I've gone traveling and I've got jet lag, if I'm outside all day, the jet lag is virtually gone. Top tip when I go home, go be outside all day. So is there science around this? Does nature being outside, being exposed to this help us?
Definitely. First off, the natural light itself, the impact of sunlight on our ability to sleep is significant. It's not the same effect from being inside with artificial light. Being outside makes a big positive difference. So people who find it difficult to wake up in the morning, the advice is usually get outside. Right. Even if it's cloudy, get outside because that natural light will stimulate you to wake up.
Yeah.
But also being outside, especially in a green space, if it's bushland or woodland or forest or whatever, just being in the presence of that vegetation and trees has a very calming effect on our body and our mind. Mm-hmm. So our blood pressure drops, our heart rate drops, our stress levels drop, which means it's much easier to go to sleep. And it's a much more relaxed, natural sleep.
Amazing. One other set of tips that I read, and I think they're just, it's I think all these things are like, they're not Bibles, right? They're not for sure. They're just, it makes you think about it, right? So take this, I think Dr. Andrade made this list, which I found, which is 10-3-2-1, which I thought was cool, which is 10 hours before bed, no more caffeine. That one's a bit of a stretch for me. I used to drink caffeine any time of day or night, and it didn't impact me. Roll around turning 30, and caffeine after 2 p.m. it's not for me anymore. Interesting. Yep. But no more caffeine. So again, when are you drinking caffeine? Three hours before bed. This one is interesting. No more food or alcohol. So when are we having our food and our dinner and our alcohol? It's can often be quite late, right? How is your body processing that and all these different things?
Yeah,
for sure. Like you have a glass of wine before bed?
Yeah. When else are you meant to drink it? Because most people don't, if you're drinking at lunchtime or in the afternoon, people are going to look at you sideways, aren't they? So really? And then you say, well, actually, I've been told I shouldn't be drinking 3 hours before I go to bed. I'm sorry.
So lunchtime is it?
Lunchtime has to be. I think it's about being mindful that if you do have a glass of wine with your dinner, or if you go out to a bar or something like that, those evenings where you have had alcohol, you're going to have a more disrupted or fragmented sleep. And if that's only a couple of nights a week.
And that's a great point.
So I think we have to work out what works for us. It's like the caffeine thing. The half-life of caffeine is about six to 8 hours. So if you have a cup of coffee, 50% of the caffeine is still in your system 6 to 8 hours later. So if you're very sensitive to caffeine, then yes, you want to stop drinking caffeinated beverages early on in the piece. I think is what a lot of people find works for them. With the food thing, I think going to bed on a full stomach is uncomfortable.
I'd say probably not a good idea. To
Makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So what were the other things? Yeah. So that was 10 hours and 3 hours.
So we've got 10 and 3 hours.
Yeah.
2 hours before bed. Now, this is the one I actually strangely have a bit of a challenge with, which is no more work. So I don't have a challenge, no more work. I think 2 hours before bed is too close to bed for me. I think it should be longer than 2 hours, but as the hard stop, 2 hours before bed.
Yeah.
No more work.
I'm with you on that, Sarah, because if you've been working all day and then you've come home and then you've done whatever you do with your partner or your family and you've had dinner, blah, 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 and then you've had a little time to relax, does that mean that you then go back to work? And I know some people do physiologically. We need that break from work in order to be good for the following day. So I'm with you. I would say choose a time when you can be sure that it's something that you could adhere to as well and say, laptop is closing at this hour. Boom. And it's gone.
Yeah.
And you're not doing anything related to work. And the world has not stopped spinning as a result. It doesn't mean that your work is going to go pear-shaped or anything. In fact, you're going to be in better shape to do the work the next day because you'll be in a more relaxed, refreshed state. So, yes, I would say probably go even 4 hours before bed.
That's what feels good to me. Yeah.
Thanks. Back and say,
so we're changing that one. We think four hours.
We're changing that. We'll go 10-4-3.
We're changing that one. 10-4-3-1. So in the 1 hour before bed, this is something I really adhere to. And I think is no screen time. So no blue light, no TV, no phones, no tablets, no all of the things, TVs, computers, any of those things, which is possibly the hardest in our world now. Lots of people bring their phones to bed. Their phone is their alarm clock, all those kinds of things. I would recommend getting old school alarm clock, actually.
If you really need an alarm clock. Yes, I'm with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, don't have an alarm clock. Mm-hmm. So it's not perfect and it's not for everyone, but it's just like some things to think about and a nice guideline of when am I eating? When am I having caffeine? When do I turn off from work? When do I wind down and get ready for bed?
Absolutely.
So I thought that was quite a nice takeaway, easy to do, easy to check in with ourselves.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining us today.
It's been a really good conversation, hasn't it? We could have talked about a lot more around sleep, I reckon. We'll have to do part two sometimes.
I think so. Yeah, there's so much to unpick.
Yeah. And I'd love to hear from our listeners what they've taken away from this. Has this sort of resonated? Has it made you think, Perhaps there's something I could be doing a bit differently, because we are all required to sleep. And I think if we remind ourselves, it's a physiological necessity. It's not a nice to have. It's not a luxury. It's an absolute necessity. So let's embrace it for the good it provides us, to keep us in a good mood, to keep us physically well and mentally healthy and thrive.
Love it. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Bye for now.
We'll see you next time.
Bye.